Hillbilly Horror Stories presents Classic Listener Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to the April 2020 Listener's Stories episode.
Hello, April.
Yeah, April's
Get
here.
The hell out of your March.
For real. For real, though. That wasn't really very good. I tried, though. I tried to almost sound like something. And then,
though.
I just can't be fake. As much as I try not to be fake, I can't be fake.
Okay.
All right, so we got some cool stories for you. And this will probably be a little longer episode, which you guys deserve it, because you're sitting around probably bored out of your mind, doing nothing, listening to podcasts and watching TV.
That's about what I'm doing.
Yeah. But either way. That's what most people are doing, because you're limited on what you can do.
True.
It's like it's raining here again.
Yeah. But we did have two beautiful days, so we can't be too picky, I guess.
I guess 2 out of 7 we'll deal with.
Yeah.
So anyways, we've got 3 listener stories that were called in to us, and then we've got one that I'm going to read to you, and it's a fairly lengthy one. It's actually from one of our listeners over in Great Britain, and it's one of his stories when he was in the British military.
Oh, awesome.
It is an awesome story.
Can't wait to hear that.
So I thought we would start off with Sarah from up in Michigan.
Okay.
And she's got a restaurant up there that she was telling us about. And she actually, instead of just telling us the occurrence, that wasn't actually her encounter. It was a friend of hers. Mm-hmm. I'll let her tell it. But it wasn't her exact encounter, but it was secondhand. But she went ahead and did some research on the actual restaurant. So she tells us all about the restaurant and then tells about the encounter.
Oh, cool.
So let's listen to Sarah real quick. Hey, guys. I've got Sarah D. from up in Michigan on the phone. Sarah's a longtime listener, and she has a cool story about a restaurant in her neck of the woods called the Whitney. And she's going to come on and give us a little background of the place. And then she's going to tell us an experience that she had there. So first and foremost, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
I've been able to interact with you a bunch on Facebook, as well as Tracy has, for the last, some time now. And it's kind of cool to be able to actually put a voice to the face that we've seen on Facebook.
Ditto. I'm so honored to be on today.
Oh, you said ditto. It makes me feel like I'm Rush Limbaugh or something. Ain't that the thing they say in it? Dittos or something for Rush?
I think so.
I don't know. I'm going to just turn the microphone over to you and let you tell us some background about the Whitney.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. The Whitney was built in 1890, between 1890 and 1894, by the lumber baron David Whitney Jr. His sprawling mansion was built in the heart of Detroit, Michigan. The home is 21,000 square feet and built with pink jasper stone, which was harvested from South Dakota. The house has 52 rooms and 10 bathrooms, 218 windows adorn her, 20 fireplaces, and a secret vault in the dining room. The home has an elevator, which we'll come back to later, and numerous Tiffany glass windows. It is said that the Tiffany stained glass is worth more than the home is. The cost to build her was an estimated total of $400,000. This home, as I said, sits in the heart of Detroit City in its midtown on Woodward Avenue. If that street sounds familiar, the America's Thanksgiving Day Parade walks down that very road. A cool thing about this home is even when you dine in the gardens, you cannot hear much, if any, road noise. It is very intimate, yet right out in the heart of the busy city. My husband and I both have dined outside, and it's amazing. You cannot hear a thing. A little about David Whitney Jr. He was born in 1830 in Watertown, Massachusetts. He and his brother made their fortunes. By the way, their fortunes were in the millions, and he was only 27 years old when he moved to Detroit, so he was already a millionaire at that age. Anyway, they made their fortunes in lumber up the eastern seaboard and into Canada. They branched out their business into Pennsylvania and parts of the Midwest, namely Ohio and Indiana. When he came to Detroit, he fell into the comforts of the elite crowds here. He was heavily involved in the Detroit Athletic Club, which was one of the finest private clubs in the country. The choice of where to build his glorious mansion was influenced by the Detroit Athletic Club. The Whitney Mansion overlooked the grounds of the DAC. He and his wife, Sarah, had one son, David, and 3 daughters, Flora Ann, Catherine, and Grace. Many of the family still reside in the area in the upscale neighborhoods of Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Both David and Sarah passed away in the home. David, only 6 years after moving into the mansion, passed in November of 1900, and then Sarah would live there alone until 1917, until her passing. From 1917 till 1932, only a caretaker lived in the home, keeping maintenance up in the house. In 1932, the Whitney family donated the property and outbuildings to the Wayne County Medical Society, where they stayed and worked until 1941. Interestingly enough, the Whitney family paid the $15,000 per year taxes for the home while the Medical Society utilized the space. That is, until the Great Depression ended and the facility's doctors could take over the payments themselves. In 1941, the Whitney family gave the home entirely to the Wayne County Medical Society in an act of support for the work that they did. Grace Whitney said at the time, quote, "It means much to us that this house filled with memories is now given to such a glorious organization as the Wayne County Medical Society," unquote. The $1 million gift to the society was regarded as one of the most notable donations ever made to them. The Visiting Nurses Association took care of the home while their offices were there from 1929 until 1979, when it was sold to an entrepreneur, Richard Kuhn, who, on a side note, owned Lionel Trains from 1986 to 1995 and established Lionel Trains Incorporated. He saved the mansion, as rumors were the home would be demolished. In 1986, after many renovations costing $3 million, he opened the home's doors as the Whitney Restaurant. He ran the highly successful restaurant until he sold it to a former Chrysler executive, Bud Liebler, for $2 million in 2007. More renovations and aesthetic updates took place, and the restaurant was once again reopened for Detroiters to enjoy. Mr. Liebler added a new name to a third-story bar, the Ghost Bar, because of the tales that Whitney still walked the halls. Discussing the hauntings in the Whitney, reports of the home being haunted dated back to the renovations of the home in the 1980s. The most reported haunting is of the home's elevator. It has a habit of moving through the floors and opening and closing on its own. Many people have reported seeing the apparition of Whitney himself throughout the home. A staff member even reported seeing a man looking out the second floor dining room window, and when the staff member asked him to leave, he simply vanished through the floor. Staff even say that silverware and utensils are stacked and table settings are moved all on their own. They also see his wife Sarah throughout the mansion as well. The ever-popular Ghost Hunters show came out to Detroit to investigate this amazing property. As you can imagine, all of us paranormal and ghost hunter fans in the area were so excited. Sadly, during their investigation, they got very little activity. However, I still remain a believer because you can't always demand those who are still around to show themselves. This restaurant has embraced its ghostly friends. As I mentioned earlier, they named the third floor bar the Ghost Bar. They also offer late-night paranormal tours. They are offered on Friday and Saturday nights at 10:45 and 11:45 p.m. You have to prepay $20 to attend. And the tour comes with a cocktail and a walk through the mansion and the outbuildings. There are also paranormal dinners the first and fourth Sundays of each month. And they provide champagne tour of the home and the outbuildings and a five-course dinner with accompanying drinks. They do limit the amount of people to 20, and you have to be 21 years or older. For those who are not in the Detroit area and would like to get a glimpse of this majestic home, I highly recommend you can take a virtual tour at thewhitney.com. So for now, that's it for the history, Jerry.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty cool little setup for, you know, if you can go tour a place that's historic as that and a five-course meal and drinks, and there's not a lot of paranormal tours where you can get that kind of stuff.
No, and it's the food is out of this world. Before we had children, my husband and I would frequent this restaurant, so it's a very nice place to be.
So you're saying you can't afford to go there now?
No,
it's just kids.
Well, the last time we went, I had a 2-year-old, and she I was pregnant with my youngest, and the 2-year-old sat there, but it was a 3-hour lunch. So I mean, it's a bit much for kids to sit through.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
Yes.
So you've had a paranormal experience at the Whitney. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, actually, it's somebody I was speaking with that had the experience, and I have a story if you want to hear it. So,
did you say somebody you was sleeping with?
No. Speaking with. Oh, Jerry!
I'm just gonna gloss right over that.
Jerry! Oh goodness! No! Oh, goodness. Oh, okay. Got to get myself back together again after that. No, my story about the Whitney House is from another person. At the time I heard the story, I was running a long-term care facility at West Grand Boulevard, which happens to be located just a few blocks from the famed Hitsville, USA house. The extermination company who had come to service our facility also provided the service to many businesses and restaurants in the area. And I was talking with one of the exterminators who said he worked the Whitney building. Well, I joked that my fiancé at the time and I were going to go eat dinner there later in the week. And a side note, by the way, oh, forgive me. Forgive that. So anyway, I asked him, you know, hey, you know, do you hear these hauntings? Do you believe that goes on? And he turned around, he looked at me. He's like, I got a story to tell you. In the mansion, they have a room that they converted into a coat closet, and where it's got long rows of hangers for the patrons to check their coats when they come to the restaurant. And he had to come late at night because he couldn't be there while there were patrons there or cooks there, obviously. So it was only him and then the guard that let him in when he treated the facility. And he was back in the coat closet all by himself, and he had gotten back to the back corner and he heard a noise and he turned around and the hangers by the front door were moving. And then he witnessed the hangers move coming towards him as though somebody's walking towards him. And they stopped just shy of hitting him. And, you know, he said that he quickly finished what he had to do and he got himself out of there. I can't blame him for that.
Yeah. I don't like going anywhere that is supposed to be haunted at nighttime. It just, I don't know why it makes a difference, but it just seems like it does.
It does. It does. There's an air about it.
So, it was a fun story.
Yeah. I hope you liked it.
I did like it. And I liked hearing the history of the place because it was a place I've never heard of.
Yes. Definitely come up. If you and Trace are up this way, come on up and check it out.
I keep saying that we're going to make it up to Detroit for something. And this year we were going to set up a live show there and ended up not doing it. So go figure.
Well, if you want to, let me know. I'll help you out as much as I can.
All right, dear. Well, Sarah, thanks for coming on. It was a pleasure talking to you finally.
You too. And thank you for having me. Please give my love to Tracy and pet a little ninja for me.
As he won't shut up in the background.
That's all right.
All right. Bye, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
So see, I definitely would like to hit that place up if we go to Detroit.
Yeah, why not?
We're going to have to make it to Detroit. And, you know, it sucks that, like, all the live shows and stuff are getting canceled, and who knows how many we'll have to cancel. But, I mean, I would really love to do one up in Detroit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd love to do one. You know, there's a bunch of places we just haven't been, and some of them we're actually doing for the first time this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chicago in June, hopefully. You know, who knows what June holds. But, I mean, I would love to be able to do the one in Chicago and...
If we go there, it's to Detroit. We need to go to the Pawn Stop.
Which one?
What is that called? Pawn?
Pawn Stars?
Or I mean, it's not even on TV anymore. But
are you talking about the one
the slickback dude?
Yeah. What was that called? Man, I can't remember.
Pawn.
It wasn't Pawn Stars because that was the other one.
That was one. What's his face? I can't even think of what the name of it was.
Hardcore Pawn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Hardcore Pawn.
I'd like to go. I wonder if they're still open.
I'm sure they still are.
That'd be cool to go just look in there and see if we can see old Slick. That'd be cool.
The next guest we got on is Cole.
Cole?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know Cole's talked to us several times.
Oh so yeah,
you know
definitely.
Exactly what we're talking about. And why waste time? Let's just get into it. It's a nice story.
All right.
Hey guys, welcome back. We've got Cole from Missouri on the show. We've had a rash of Missouri listeners calling in, which is cool. We love our listeners in the Show Me State. And Cole, you are telling me you've got a couple of stories that all stem from haunted houses when you were younger. So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to you and let you tell your story, and then we'll talk a little bit about it afterwards. So it's all yours, buddy.
All right. Thank you, sir. Well, it starts out when I was a young kid, I'd say, you know, pre-10 years old, something like that. In the house, my bedroom was in the back part of the house there, and I would sleep in there, you know, by myself most nights. Well, there would be some nights where I'd wake up, you know, have a bad dream or something like that, and want to get up and then go from my bedroom to across the house there to my dad's bedroom. I'd, you know, get in there and be like, hey, can I, you know, can I crash in here? And he'd be like, wow, yeah, I'll, you know, blah, 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 blah. Get in there and lay there. And the way his room was set up is like the bed would look out the door. And so you would look out into the living room, kind of. The way the house was set up, the dusk to dawn light outside would shine some light in through a window, and it would kind of, you know, light up the living room and the other rooms just real faintly, just not too much light, but you could, you know, it wasn't pitch black in there. More often than not, anytime that ever happened, or, you know, even if I was in my room and not getting up and going in his, I would notice what would look like a, you know, like a shadowy figure or a shadow or something like that, just going from room to room. Like it would go, I'd lay there and look out the door, and it would go from the front room there into the living room, and it would go into back by where my room was at and whatnot, and then take the hallway and turn around and, you know, maybe hear something in the kitchen there, dishes in the strainer or something like that, move a little bit, or, you know, some knocks or something like that. See it come back through the kitchen, it would go back through the room, and then, you know, every great once in a while, it would come into his room there, and I would pretend to have my eyes closed, but they wouldn't be closed all the way. I'd, you know, have them squinted kind of just so I could see what was going on. When that would happen, it would, you know, it would walk into his room, walk at the foot of the bed, and walk back and forth at the foot of the bed, or, you know, maybe walk in and just kind of stand there for a minute and turn around and walk out. And I, you know, this happened multiple times. Later on down the road, we moved when I was about, you know, middle school, 13 years old or something like that. We, you know, moved into a new place. Nothing happened or anything like that for a little while. You know, we've probably been living there within the first year this happened. So I'm back in the day, we used to all get on our flip phones and whatnot, talk, you know, in group conversation with everybody and, you know, just get friends in there. So I'm doing that one night with a friend and a couple other people, laying there in bed, and my room light is off, but I had my closet light on with the doors, the pull doors, the double pull doors kind of cracked a little bit, and the light in the closet on, so I could see, you know, a little bit. And we're sitting there talking and, you know, cracking up and laughing and whatnot. And then my phone lit up, and I could see it in my peripherals that the phone lit up there. So I pull it away from my face to see what happened there. And it's dark because the phone died. There, you know, the battery instantly ran out for some reason. And I didn't have it plugged in, but I didn't think it was going to die or anything like that, or I would have had it plugged in. And so I pull the phone back away from my face and take a look at it. When you're looking at something, focused on something, you can kind of, you know, see behind it as well too. Well, I seen something, you know, like a black shadowy thing kind of there behind my phone. And so I moved the phone away to look in front of my closet there. And there was a black, you know, shadowy kind of figure that was almost transparent, but not quite all the way transparent, standing there in front of the closet. And it was almost instantaneous. It went straight over to me, to where my bed was, right next to the bed right there, right in front of me, and back to where it was at when I seen it initially, and down through the floor it went. And I lost it. I grabbed my comforter and my pillow and my phone and ran into the living room and got on the couch. And I don't think I slept a bit that the rest of the evening, because the rest of the night, like, it's a dad's house is a modular home. So it's, you know, trailer welded onto a basement. Well, I kept hearing something banging on those like poles in the basement or whatever for the majority of the evening. Just sound like somebody every once in a while would just smack one of those poles real hard or something like that. And it would, you know, be in different spots of the house. Like they were, I think there's four or five in the basement there. And it sounded like somebody was hitting them periodically walking through the basement. And so it was definitely a startling situation there. That was the only time that I ever had anything happen to me there, but I didn't live there too much longer after that. I moved with my mom for school and stuff like that. But dad still lives there in that house. And he tells me that periodically, you know, he lives there by himself. He says he swears up and down that, you know, if he's sitting in his room or something like that, doing whatever, he hears voices in the house, like two people conversating or something like that, to where they're talking soft enough to where he can't really make out what they're saying, but, you know, it just sounds like two different voices talking back and forth to each other. And he says, I mean, he can never figure out what it is. It's not TV. It's not, you know, two people talking to each other at the house because he's the only one there. And it, you know, it kind of, I mean, he just kind of blows it off, you know, for the most part, but he has mentioned it and brought it up to me. So, I mean, it's got to mean something, you know, that he would even acknowledge it, because I'm pretty sure back in the day when I told him about my experience, he said I was nuts. So, but yeah, so I mean, I guess there is stuff that still goes on there in the house, and I'm not around there to witness it personally, luckily, because I mean, I couldn't deal with that. That's too much for me, you know, but he does experience some things there in the house, though, still to this day. I don't know what would cause it, or if, you know, there's no history or nothing like that. There was no house there before he got a house there. And then, like I said, I used to witness it back in the day when I was a kid at the old house. So, I mean, I don't know the backstory on the house or anything. So it's just a kind of crazy experience that I used to witness back in the day when I was a kid that Dad, I guess, periodically still witnesses to this day. So I don't really know what's going on there.
You know, it's funny you was mentioning the fact that he would hear the voices, but they would be almost like whispers, and he really couldn't figure out, you know, who was saying it, or you really couldn't make out what was being said, because that was the same experience as I had growing up in a house. I could hear the voices that I could make out. It was two or three different voices, and they were coming through, like, it sounded like they were coming through the ductwork of the house, but I never could really make out what they were saying. So very similar to what I experienced.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what he says. He says he can, you know, he can get real quiet and pause anything that he's got going on or something like that, and just try as hard as he can to listen. And he can never, you know, pinpoint where it's actually coming from or make out what they're actually trying to say or whisper about or nothing like that. So it just, it, you know, it just gives it that weird kind of eerie, creepy factor. But like I said, he, you know, he eats a bowl of nails for breakfast. You know, it's, he's my dad. So, I mean, he blows it off like it's nothing. If it was me, I'd be losing it. So,
yeah, I definitely get that. Let me ask you this, Cole. How old are you now?
I'm 28.
That's what I said. You sound kind of young. So, at least to me, that's young.
Oh, man.
So, when you start talking about, you know, this stuff happening at, you know, under 10 and 13 and stuff like that, I figured it couldn't have been too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's long ago enough to where I consider it back in the day, but I mean, back in the day for some people is 40 years or something like that. You know, mine was just about, you know, a little more than 15 years ago or so. So, I still remember it to this day that, you know, I could picture it in my head right now and like close my eyes and just look at the situation and think about the whole deal that's going on. So, I mean, it's definitely, made an impact, and I'm not going to forget that it happened by any means. So
yeah, those things stick with you, because like I said, my events happened when I was like 13, you know, and I'm 52 now. So I mean, we're going on 40 years ago, and I can still remember everything like it was yesterday. So
yeah, exactly.
It's good. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Cole, sharing your stories with us.
Not a problem, Jerry. Anytime. I'd listen to you guys, you know, pretty frequently, and really enjoy your show. And you know, I've branched out and listened to a handful of podcasts that you guys have plugged as well on your show. And I just hope you guys keep going with the show and, you know, are doing all right. And this virus doesn't keep you guys from turning the show off by any means. So.
No, it obviously it may affect live events down the road.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just part of it. But as far as the actual show, I mean, it's not going to affect us at all. Everything is still going as planned. We got no intentions of stopping anytime soon.
Good. I'm glad to hear.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. And thanks for all the kind words.
Not a problem, sir.
I tell you, I mean, in that situation, I could see somebody going to their dad and saying, hey, can I crash in your room? Because when you're hearing all kinds of noises and seeing shadow figures
and
all kinds of stuff. Mm-mm.
I'd just jump up in there and say, move over, dad.
You know, I think about, like I said, the time when I was experiencing stuff and my parents' house, and I was about that age. I was about 13, and I can remember sometimes being definitely scared. I don't think I ever ventured out. I just found a way. Like I said, I bought a stereo to put beside my bed to drown the sounds out and stuff like that. And, you know, like I said, some of the stuff was very similar. The conversations, we talked about that. You know, his dad says that he could hear conversations in the house, but he couldn't really make out what was being said. And that was the exact same thing that happened to me. So,
oh my gosh, that is crazy.
Okay.
That'd be cool to be able to hear those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people are like, if these walls could talk, mine did.
Yeah. For real.
All right, I told you we had this story from Chris when he was in the British Army. So let me read this one. It's kind of a long one. So buckle up.
Oh, Lordy.
Hello, I wanted to share a story that I had from when I was in the British Army. On completion of the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst, in December 2007, I was deployed 29 Regiment RLC in the Duke of Gloucester Barracks in, I think this is Cirencester. Sometimes I screw up my British pronunciations because they kind of leave sometimes some syllables out that I normally would have pronounced. On arriving to the regiment as young second lieutenant, fresh out of the factory, I had to live within the officer's mess for at least 12 months before they would let me rent my own house with my at-the-time girlfriend, now wife. The base was originally an Air Force base used during World War II and was involved heavily in the Battle of Britain. The base was actually the home of a Polish volunteer pilot who, at the start of the war, signed up for a fight for Britain against the Nazis, much like the volunteer Eagle squadrons comprised of U.S. pilots. As a result of this, the officer's mess had about 100 bedrooms and is currently used as a mounting base for rapid deployment when required. At the time when I was living there, it housed 5 officers, so we had ample room to say the least. One of the joys of being the youngest officer in the regiment is the requirement to be the orderly officer, which is the duty officer, which involves doing patrols and checking things like armory and ammunition bunkers are secure, etc. My first experience came when I was an orderly officer. One weekend, I was the only person in the mess. My usual routine on Saturday morning was to get up, go to the guard room, check in with the guard staff, and make sure no soldiers had managed to get themselves arrested the night before partying too hard. Sound like a fun job. I would then head back to the mess for breakfast. I would put my order in with the chef, and then go on and play a few rounds of snooker whilst I waited for it to be prepared. After a couple of games, I'm not very good, so a game takes a while. I just had racked up another game when the chef came through to tell me that my breakfast was ready. I ate my breakfast and read the paper, then headed back to the snooker room to play another frame or two. When walking into the room, I noticed that someone had broken the cue, which I had left on the table. It was leaning up against the snooker table.
So is it snooker? Is it pool?
I think it's something similar.
Okay.
Assuming that it was the chef, I reset and carried on playing. The chef came in sometime later to tell me he was leaving and would return at lunchtime. I asked him, did he break the balls on the table, to which he just looked back at me with a mild form of disdain and said, "Not me, sir." I shrugged it off and carried. A couple of weeks later, I was alone in the mess again and I was on duty yet again when I received a phone call from guardroom about 0300 regarding a noise complaint from the married quarters near the officer's mess. The complaint was about the party we were having in the mess and they requested we quiet down as we were waking up the senior officers. Although half asleep, I was puzzled. I knew I was the only person in the mess and I couldn't hear anything. I got my uniform on and went down to the bar. I suspected the lights were off and no one was home. However, something just did not feel right, and I can still feel the hairs on the back of my neck stand up as I type this now. I quickly returned back to the room and informed the guard room it wasn't us and then tried to go back to sleep. The next day, I went to the guard room and spoke to the guards and asked them if they got to the bottom of the noise complaint, to which one responded, "It must be the ghost," which knocked me back a bit. He told me that the ammunition storage area was now used to the duty pilot's mess. It's where the pilots would sit before a mission or when they were waiting to be scrambled if a Luftwaffe attack was spotted on radar. One day, a Polish pilot who had been wounded during a dogfight was returning to the airfield, had lost consciousness, and had crashed into the regimental sergeant major's. When you look at the house now, you can see one is different to the rest. So he crashes into this house, and he continued to the duty's pilot's mess, killing several people. He then informed me that when he patrols with his attack down in the night, that he will refuse to go anywhere near the ammunition storage area, and it will just sit with its hackles up, growling at the bunkers.
Oh, gosh.
A few weeks later, I was again, you guessed it, the duty officer and was alone on a Sunday afternoon watching a movie in my room. The corridor I lived in was the first floor, not the ground floor, and had about 20 rooms, which was separated by heavy wooden and glass fire doors every 10 meters. There was about 6 in total along the corridor. I knew I was in the mess alone and was waiting for the other officers to return from their weekend activities, so I had someone to talk to besides myself. Needless to say, I heard the fire door furthest from my room open and close. Footsteps, the second open and close, followed by louder footsteps, and then the third. The third door was just outside of my room, so I got up thinking it was Katie, my neighbor. I got up, opened my door, probably within 5 seconds of the third door closing. When I opened the door, the fire door was still swinging back and forth on its heavy springs, but no one was in sight. The fourth fire door wasn't moving, so the person had to be within 10 meters of me, and Katie was unlocking her bedroom door. I then looked down the other end of the corridor to my left. The third fire door was on my right, and I saw a man in a flying suit look at me, nod his head, then slowly walk down the stairs. I took off after him to see what he wanted, as I still thought it may be a transit guest who had just arrived in the mess. When I got to the top of the stairs, a couple of seconds, there was no one on the stairs. I looked around the main entrance, the kitchen, the dining room, and the snooker room, but I was still alone. When you were in the mess, on your own, you would get waves of feelings uncomfortable and that you were being watched. Other officers in the mess had also had similar and creepy experiences of things moving, doors opening and closing. I thought I would share. Feel free to use this if you would like.
I mean, I'm glad he's not the only one that heard that. Just nobody ever talked about it, or?
I guess not.
Wow.
I love these military stories.
I do, too. Bless his heart. Thank you for your service, by the way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and it's funny. It reminds me, because Brian was our first paranormal story. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the stuff that happened in the Marines barracks. And he's got his buddy that's got other stories from that same barracks that we need to get on the show.
Definitely do. That has, I mean, it just seemed like he was alone a lot.
but
well, I understand.
I think that was kind of his job, was to be there, the one to hold the fort down.
Somewhere. Right. That would be kind of scary to, you know, have to endure that by yourself, I guess. But at least he found out that he wasn't the only one. So that's a good thing. Because some people might think, I mean, I might be thinking, Lord, what am I doing here? I need to be with somebody else.
Yeah, all this time by myself is getting to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we're all experiencing right now.
Oh, gosh, don't you know that? Well, thank you, hon. You take care, Chris. Thank you for sharing that story.
Okay, our last story of the night is from Bailey. And Bailey sent me a message on Instagram and said she had some cool stories. And I said, let's get you on. And we're going to hear her story now.
Awesome, Bailey. Thank you, hon.
Hey, guys. We've got Bailey from Texas on. And she sent a message a little while back on Instagram and said, hey, I've got a story for you guys to tell. And obviously, we love to bring you guys on and let you tell your stories. First of all, Bailey, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, Bailey, that tends to lead towards the negative as we're recording this. We're right in the midst of all the school closures and everything for the corona outbreak. And you have some happy stories that we thought would be perfect to get on the air.
Yes.
Your stories involved interactions with loved ones who had passed on, and I'm just going to turn the microphone over to you and let you tell your story.
Okay, so my first story, this happened whenever I was in around the sixth grade. Just to kind of prep this story, I'm going to give you a little background. I got to know two of my great-grandparents, and they were called Mama Joe and Daddy Joe, mainly because my Mama Joe's name is Mary Joe, and then her husband is Joe. So Mama Joe and Daddy Joe. I used to go to their house all the time whenever I was little. Me and my Daddy Joe, we were like really close, and we would always go like, you know, play outside. He was always giving me popsicles, and he had these like toy trucks, and we were always like playing with them and stuff. And he was really, really great grandpa. He ended up passing away whenever I was 6, unfortunately. But after he passed away, people in my family were saying he didn't move on. My Mama Joe, she reported every morning that he would come into your room like she said the door would open because she closed every night. He would hear Mary Jo and feel a hand on her shoulder. She would wake up. And she said he was like right by her ear. You know, she could like feel his breath and everything. He did that for like months. It was just like really sweet. Lots of our family members, you know, were like, oh, you know, she's just imagining things. You know, it's grief. It's mourning. But, you know, some of us were like, no, we believe her. Even my uncle, he would go stay some weekends with her. He was sleeping in one of the back bedrooms. One night he was sleeping back there. He heard Daddy Joe's back bedroom because my Daddy Joe and my Mama Joe, they slept in separate rooms. You know, they were like really old school. Anyway, so he heard Daddy Joe's bedroom door open. And then his bedroom was like right next to Daddy Joe's. And then he heard his bedroom door open. And then about 10 seconds went by and his door shut. And then Daddy Joe's door shut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and my uncle, he is like straight-laced lawyer, you know, doesn't, you know, believe in anything paranormal or like spirits or anything like that. So for him to be like, yeah, this happened and I'm a little freaked out, was like, what, you know? And so, but anyways, fast forward to, you know, sixth grade, I'm spending a summer over there with my mom, Jo, at her house. I get a call, and basically my grandma, my Gammy, she ended up passing away from breast cancer. We were also close. I was very close to her. I had a really great relationship with her. That night, I was just like heartbroken. I was like by myself in a room and I was just like crying and crying and crying. And I just like could not stop crying. And because I just missed her so much. And I was just so sad that I wasn't there with her whenever it happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I fell asleep that night finally. And I mean, like, you know, like when you're crying so hard, your face is like, you like feel a heartbeat in it and it's like just sore and it hurts. Basically, you know, I was crying so hard that you have nothing left. There's like no more tears. Your face is swollen. It hurts. And I eventually fell asleep. I had a dream. And in that dream, I was 6 years old again. I wasn't the age I was at the time. I got out of the bed. I ran out of the bedroom and I ran to the front porch. I opened the door and my Daddy Joe's standing there. I jump into his arms and he's holding me. Now, that's something I used to do. I just would jump and he'd catch me, you know. Then we did everything that we used to do whenever I was little. So we were playing with the toy trucks. We were catching bugs. We were picking flowers. We were just talking and talking and talking. And the thing is about that dream, I can't remember anything we talked about. There's only one conversation I remember, and it was towards the end, and he was walking me back to the porch. I was walking up the steps, and I turned around, and I looked at him, and I said, why didn't Gammy come? And he looked at me, and he said, she's talking to Jesus right now, so I came instead. And then I went inside, I walked to the bed, got back in, and then I woke up.
Oh, that is a sweet story.
Yeah, I mean, what it did for me, like, it just like heartbreak, you know? Just that peace I got from that. You know, I still miss her and feel sad, but as for like my heart hurting, it doesn't hurt.
No, I guarantee.
Yeah, so it was really special.
Well, see, those were two really good stories.
Yeah. I do have one more.
Okay, go ahead.
And so it's kind of similar, but this one definitely freaked my husband out big time. This happened a couple of months ago, actually. My Mimi, she's my great-grandma. I just fortunately got to know a lot of my grandparents, and so I'm very thankful for that. So I have a lot of, you know, great-grandparents. Anyways, well, my Mimi, she's my great-grandma. She ended up falling into a coma. This was a couple of months back. Anyway, so one night while she's in the coma, we were planning to go see her the next morning. My husband and I, we went to bed. In the middle of the night, we just hear, like, bang, just really loud. And then we feel our bed, like something underneath it moving. And we're like, we wake up and we're like freaking out. It's pitch black, you know, and like everything, I reach for my side table and everything's gone. And I'm like, where's my side table? And so I get my phone out and I realize my whole side table has been knocked over. And like my lamp, my water, it's like everything's like spilt. And JR is getting up. He gets his phone and he's looking around and we realize that it's our lab, Brody. He's a big old boy. He's like 100 pounds. He's underneath our bed. And that's what that bumping underneath the bed was. It was him underneath it. And we're like, what the heck? And so we look under and we're like trying to get him out and he's shaking. I can like see him shaking.
Oh.
And yeah. And so it was weird. And whenever he gets nervous, he always like smacks his lips kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. He was doing that. And so we're like, what happened to him? And so finally JR just kind of gets him to come out. And then once he comes out, he runs out of our bedroom and into the living room. and he's just staying in there. He won't come out. So we're like, okay, whatever. So we shut the door. We let him stay out there. I'm like, maybe that was like a doggy panic attack or something. I didn't know. But it was like late at night and I was ready to go back to bed. So we get back in bed. I look over at our other dog. We have another dog. Her name is Hey Hey, and she's a little whippet. And she's in a corner and she's looking over towards me and my side, and her head is just kind of down. You know how like dogs kind of like, where they're kind of like scared or aggressive and they're like putting their heads down and like looking?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what she was doing it to me. And she was looking over in the corner where that my side table is next to the bed. Because at that point, I had already put everything back up and I got in bed. And I was like, you know, hey, 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 hey. And she just like wouldn't get happy or energetic. I was trying to call her over to me and she just stayed in that corner and just like gave this look. And I was like, okay. So anyways, we lay back down, turn out the lights, and we're laying there and it's quiet. And then all of a sudden I hear someone go, Bailey, just like that. And I knew in that moment it wasn't JR. It wasn't him, because it was a woman's voice. And it was just clear as day. I asked him, I was like, was that you? And I don't even know why I asked it, because I knew it wasn't him. And he was like, what? Then we just went back to bed. And anyways, so later on that morning, I go into work and I see that my dad's calling me. So I answer the phone. He told me that my Mimi passed away. At the time that she passed away, and then everything that happened, there's like a 2-minute difference. We're positive that it was my Mimi coming to say goodbye, basically.
Oh, that's sad, but at the same time.
Before she went on.
Yeah. Well, goodness.
Mm-hmm. It was like 2 minutes after she passed away.
Hmm. I love those kind of stories, though, because even though you didn't really know what was going on, when you put two and two together, it just gives you a feeling of, man, there really is an afterlife. I know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know it freaked JR out, but me, it was just like, it made me feel better, you know, and it made sense. The way my Mimi was, she's just very, you know, very prim and proper. She always, you know, kept everyone updated, always sent out birthday cards, very communicated very well and reached out to people. And so I was like, of course she came by to say goodbye before she went on. She had to make sure she had all that in order.
Yeah, that would be the proper thing to do, right?
Yep, exactly.
Well, Bailey, I appreciate you coming on and sharing those stories with us.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for letting me share them on the show.
Oh, it's no problem. Like I said, I love having listeners come on and share stories, because it shows everybody else that if they're experiencing something, and sometimes they might be thinking, well, I might want to just keep this hush hush because I don't want people to think I'm, you know, loony or something like that. I think it shows everybody that they're not alone.
Yeah. No, definitely.
All right, dear. Well, I appreciate it. And we'll have to make sure that we look you up next time we're in the Texas area.
Yeah, totally. You could come to Huntsville. You know, we have a prison museum, so that's fun. Lots of haunted stuff like that, you know.
I have no idea where Huntsville even is.
It's literally known as Prison City, and we used to actually have a prison rodeo. And so that's about what we're known for, because we have so many prisons. We have, like, literally I could walk to one, like, right down the street, and I'm in the middle of town.
What part of Texas is Huntsville in?
East Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's probably a little closer. Like I said, we drove through Huntsville, Alabama on our way to Houston, but...
Yeah, I think Huntsville, Alabama is a lot nicer, and just from what I looked up.
All right, dear. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Well, thank you, and y'all have a good night.
You too. See, that was a nice little uplifting story. That's why I wanted to end on that one. They were all really good uplifting stories.
They are all good stories, yes. She was so upbeat, too, like right from the get-go.
Yeah, she was excited.
I love it. Well, we appreciate you guys sharing your stories with us. Oh, I mean, we really do. It's good to hear from people that have, I mean, it's almost amazing how many people have these stories to share.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I was telling you off the air, it's a side note, that her husband is like massively huge. He's a professional, not necessarily a professional, but he's like a power builder.
Oh, dang.
And it's like his arms are bigger than my whole body.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Seriously, that's amazing.
I would not want to meet him in a dark alley or a light alley or just in a living room.
Oh, not even in the living room?
I would meet him in a living room. I wouldn't say anything bad to him. I would be apologizing profusely at anything. You know, I'm sorry. Is your drink a little too warm? I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't mean to.
Oh, I want to see a picture of him.
I'll show you a picture.
Yeah, cool, man. That's good for him.
All right, guys, that wraps up this edition. We will see you guys. Well, I mean, we see you all the time or hear you all the time. But yeah. On this edition, we'll see you next month.
Next month. All right. Hopefully by next month, this crap will be calmed down.
A little bit, hopefully.
Hopefully.
And remember, if you've got some stories that you want to hear on here, give us a call.
Yeah, please do.
Or give us an email or something.
All right, guys. We love you all. Take care of yourselves.
Bye.